Good morning, monsters, and welcome to today's show. Morning, Lee. I'm glad that you're here joining us. We have a great show today. I'm very looking forward to this. My guest, Christopher Noel, will be joining us in just a couple weeks up here in Wisconsin at the Marinette Menominee Bigfoot and Paranormal Convention. So I wanted to have him on to kind of help promote that and talk about his work as well. Some of the stuff you may not get to hear at the convention. So I thought we'd start things off with that. But first, guys, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Monsters on the Edge. Some of the stuff we got coming up, of course, if you guys haven't already checked it out, On the Trail of Undiscovered Beasts is our show on Paraflix Paranormal Plus streaming platform. It is season one is available now. It is all about Bigfoot in Wisconsin and some of the sighting reports and witness accounts that we have taken on and encountered. And season two will be coming out eventually later on this year, and that will cover some other weirder creatures and Bigfoot as well all over the country. And $3.99 a month if you're interested, and promo code CAPS10 gets you 10% off your first 3 months. If you guys want to show your support for all that we do here at Cryptids, Anomalies, and the Paranormal Society, head on over to our website, Wisconsin Caps, and click on Shop Our Store. There you guys can find all the merchandise with all of your favorite logos and stuff, and you can wear it, sport it, show it, and let everybody know how much you enjoy Cryptids, Anomalies, and the Paranormal Society. And while you're online, make sure you follow us and support us on all of our social media platforms, Patreon, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube. You can find us at Wisconsin Caps or WI Caps on Instagram. You want to come out and hang out with us live in person, June 3rd, we are going to be at the first ever Small Town Monsters Monster Fest in Canton, Ohio. Look at the lineup of people at this event. There is some great names covering all things Bigfoot and small town monsters and everything here. So guys, make sure that you can come out. Well, I can't talk this morning. Make sure you guys come out and check this out. Canton, Ohio, June 3rd. And then, of course, the Marinette Menominee Bigfoot and Paranormal Convention. June 9th is the dinner. If you didn't already get your tickets, that is done and sold out. So you guys kind of come out to June 10th for all the speakers and all the cool events and stuff that we got going on. You can still get tickets at the door for that, obviously. And Angela Zabel's psychic gallery reading will be available as well. You can get tickets for that at the door. Myself, my guest Christopher Noel, Chad Lewis, and Angela Zabel are the speakers at this event. It is sponsored by Paraflix, Paralinked, Ravenwood Gardens, of course, Cryptids, Anomalies, and the Paranormal Society, and American Ghost Walks. And then, guys, head on down to Chicago, June 17th, for the Chicago Paranormal Convention. An amazing event. I think this is the fourth one, this one coming up. It's going to be great. And in August, we're going up to Sault Ste. Marie for the MI Paracon. And in September as well, we head to Glen Beulah, Wisconsin for the Great Lakes Paranormal Conference. And of course, in November, the weekend before Thanksgiving, we head down to Lexington, Kentucky, as always, for CryptidCon. So that's what we got coming up. We got, again, some other events on there. I got a library talk, and I'm just waiting for some graphics and some stuff to promote that. But that's all I got for me. But all right, let's get into this. My guest today is, again, one of the speakers from the Marinette Menominee Bigfoot and Paranormal Convention on June 10th in Marinette, Wisconsin. He is an author, a researcher, a documentary filmmaker, and so much more. Introducing, please welcome Christopher Noel.
Hey,
how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good today.
I can't believe that's all the events you had to talk about.
There was a lot more. We just got back from Rhinelander this weekend.
Yeah, I would hope so, because you're running a little thin on those conferences and get-togethers there.
Yeah, yeah. That's the first time I've heard that. Usually it's the opposite, that I have a lot.
I'm joking. I can't believe how industrious you guys are. I've done two conferences or spoken at two conferences in my entire life, and this will be the third. So I'm on a much more sort of casual time frame here.
Well, it is our pleasure to have you come up for this event. I can't wait.
Looking forward to it. So you say it's sold out?
The dinner, because the dinner is by the plate. So they we had to have a final number. So we stopped selling tickets for that as of the 15th so that we can get that all scheduled and booked everything.
I see. Yeah. Yep. I'm very excited. I'm going to jump on a plane, fly over there. You're going to pick me up at the airport and we're going to have fun. Is there any woods right around there that we can go and explore? Or is there not going to be any time?
Ooh, that is definitely a possibility.
We should both look on Google Earth and see if we can pinpoint a likely spot for some nighttime, just an hour or two, maybe after on Saturday night, maybe after everything is over.
Definitely sounds good, man. The event is actually started by the Haydn Adventure, which the Haydn Adventure, if you may or may not know, was or is 80 acres of private land, and it is owned by the people that run the convention, Craig and Barbara Salk. And we could definitely have you guys come out and check that
out. Cool. That's cool. Yeah. All right. So, what do you want to talk about?
I don't know. What do you do for a living? What do you have you written anything interesting? Or
how about that debt ceiling?
Yeah.
Let's just plunge right into politics. I think that would be a good idea.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yes, let's do that.
Let's just do that.
So do you think the government knows Bigfoot exists?
That's sort of politics. That's a good segue. That's a good segue. I would think that almost definitely so. That's what everybody who seems to be smart says. And so I'll say it too. Because there's just too many stories of people finding bodies and suddenly here come the vans, here come the SUVs, and they don't have the body anymore. So, some of those stories could be trumped up, to get back to politics, but they can't all be made up. And it would only make sense because there are so many reasons that the government would be in their interest to keep this thing continually, decade after decade, under wraps, not just like the timber industry, which is an easy one to think of. Like, remember the spotted owl? This would be spotted owl times 10,000. But just the public unrest, the sense of suddenly that our low trust in the government would plummet even further if we found out that they've known about these monsters all this time. And haven't seen fit to fill us in when we're the ones going out in the national parks, in jeopardy sometimes, even if 99% of Sasquatch are not going to pose any threat. There are some that will. And just think about the lawsuits of people whose loved ones have gone missing in national parks because they weren't warned about this. They didn't have informed consent before they went out hiking in there. And even if you can never prove that it was Sasquatch, you can prove that the government knew this threat was there and didn't inform us. These thousands of lawsuits might be able to connect the dots on that. There's so many more reasons. Can you think of some?
I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Every time somebody asks me if I believe that, the government knows this everything, the logging industry, the National Park Service, and the missing people. I mean, there's a reason why they're not going to tell you. And that's the same reasons that I tell everyone as well.
Think of all the billions of dollars that the U.S. takes in the national parks and tourism. That'll just slow to a trickle. Because people will initially assume, because they don't know all the mountains of evidence of peaceful interaction that's taken place over so long, they'll default to the most sensationalistic framing of the species, which is that they're this rogue, like marauding monster that you better not go in the woods anymore. And so it's just going to be, and it's going to take a long time before the truth kind of bubbles up. There'll be congressional hearings about, is it an endangered species? And then it'll finally come out that, well, we can never call it an endangered species because we can never get a count. We can never tell. Their population might be thriving. They might not be endangered at all. quite possible that their population is growing faster than ours in North America. I mean, the last few years we've been like 1.5% population growth in North America, and I would not be surprised at all. I bet you wouldn't either if Sasquatch are burgeoning a lot faster than that. So we might be endangered species now. That's not true, but it's going to take a long time. All sorts of congressional hearings to I hope finally label them as an indigenous people that and you know equate killing one with murder, homicide, because they are homo probably in our genus. And so, you know, a decade or two down the road, things will sort themselves out, but it's going to be a chaotic couple of decades. And I'm hoping I'm still around to see it, but it may not be for 100 years, or maybe next Thursday. Mm-hmm. Starting out, you know.
I was thinking as you're talking there, you know, we had not to get on a different topic, but you know, you had the whole Roswell incident happened, and everybody came out and said, okay, this, you know, on all the newspapers, the government all said, okay, we had this crash landing of this UFO and stuff. And then the next day they turned it all around and said, oh no, it's just a weather balloon.
Now, did we say crash saucer? No. Yeah. We meant weather. I get that mixed up a lot too. Yeah. Weather.
And I'm just wondering, you know, is this going to be the same thing? Like, let's say somebody goes out and hits one of these creatures with their car, and it hits the local papers. There's pictures of it. There's police reports. And then the very next day they say, oh, no, it was a bear. We were mistaken.
Yeah. Whoops, you know? Yeah. Just like there's a couple of pictures that remain of the Roswell stuff, I think, or only pictures after they retracted the story. Maybe that's the case.
Yeah.
And they had that big aluminum thing with that guy saying, yeah, weather balloon.
Yeah, holding it up. Yeah.
Holding it up. I think they quashed all the earlier pictures, and they probably do the same with this. Like if you were to mistakenly hit and kill like a juvenile Sasquatch on the road, where would you go? Mm-hmm. What would you do? I'm asking you, Barnaby.
Oh, I actually have, you know, like doing this research and stuff that I do. It's something that I've had to think about.
You have to think about it. Yeah.
I have an idea. I have a plan, and I don't talk about it for the pure reason of if it did happen,
right.
I need to keep that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, I have an idea.
I mean, you may have a better idea than I do, but I don't think it's anything more complicated than to take tons of video, cut different tissue samples out and distribute them all over. Mm-hmm. Maybe cut the head and the feet, I mean, head and the hands off, even though that would be horrible and grisly. But for the sake, if you really want to get this thing through, you would do that. Then you'd contact local press, all the local press you possibly could within 100 miles, and have them all come. And, you know, some of them are, you know, probably the higher ups will get tipped off. So it's going to be a race. But if you've successfully distributed and preserved various body parts in like 12 different places, I think that you'll be able to get through, especially when you combine that with the video that you have taken, exhaustive video of the body, and then you copy the video, because the feds, they're not perfect. They're not going to get to you before you have a chance to.
Hard copies. Various, not just online, not data. You got to have jump drives and
on the thumb drives, and then you get 10 copies and you distribute them all around the place too, all around the county that you're in. So unless they just kill you, you'll be able to talk about it. And you'll be able to back up what you got. But anyway, that's the only way that we're going to get a body in an ethical way. There's groups like the Wood Ape Conservancy that are out there trying to kill one. That's not right. But anyway, that's kind of a macabre way to start this interview.
Yeah,
yeah, cut off its hands and.
What are we gonna do? We're gonna cut it in parts. We're gonna put it in boxes and mail it to people. That's what we're gonna do.
Oh, I can't wait to see you at the conference.
Yep. Yeah. We'll see. What are we doing in a couple weeks, Chris?
I may distribute body parts for you. If you're in the audience in the front row, you get a body part.
Yep,
no, I'm you get obviously. A hand. obviously that would be horrible, and it would only be if it accidentally came out in front of a pickup truck and was enough to kill it. I mean, what else are you going to do? Try to return it? Probably its parents or its mother would be around, so maybe ethically you should just carry it to the side of the road and let them take it back. Oh man, maybe I've really stepped in it here.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. If you do hit a juvenile and kill it, you got to think that these things aren't alone. They're out there.
Especially juveniles. A teenage male might be alone. You know, yeah. How they go rogue to sort of spread the genetic distribution. But a child wouldn't be. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this is making me sad. kind of queasy.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's turn it around, man. So you do a lot of time. You spend a lot of time out in the woods. And one of the things that I find really interesting, you know, you're talking about, you know, people going out in the woods and being unsafe with these things and all that stuff. And, you know, with that in mind, you go out to the woods by yourself. Like, you go night camping and spend all this time out there by yourself, and you've had run-ins with these creatures. And, you know, you're looking at this from the point of what are the actual odds, you know, that these things are violent? With as many encounters as we've had, you don't hear about the people that don't make it. But, I mean,
that's
go out there and have these encounters, they all come back. They're pushed out of the area. You know, they're scared out, but these things aren't necessarily inherently violent, you know. Have you had any, like, negative run-ins out in the woods by yourself?
I think by far the vast majority of these groups are highly disciplined, or else they'd be seen more often. And the discipline would teach that if you mess with the hairless ones, more hairless ones are going to come. It's only going to be worse for us. Speaking as a Sasquatch. But, you know, there are certainly ones that have emotional problems and lack of inhibition and brain tumors and all sorts of things that if you're just in the wrong place at the wrong time. But my level of fascination almost always outweighs my level of fear when I go out in the woods. And so, I mean, it's a three-step process for me, and very few people, it seems to me, go through all three. Go out in the woods, even small micro forests near you, and look for odd structures, you know, stick and tree structures that don't seem like what would be fun for our species to make, but you're not sure yet. You find these, and then you leave an audio recorder night after night. And I have one that you can program just to record at night so you don't waste the batteries during the day and then the memory. And then you pick it up and you listen to it in real time, because you can't just look at the spectrogram, because lots of subtle but definitive, unmistakable sounds like tapping, wood knocks, and low vocalizations aren't visible on the spectrogram. So you have to listen to in real time. And I'm lucky because my day job is editing people's books, so I can edit while listening. You know, so I can sit here. And then it's thrilling when you hear wood knocks, you hear vocals, you hear trees being pushed down violently on a still night. And then you know that this is probably not human children out there in the middle of the night. It's probably Sasquatch, or it's not adult people at 3:15 in the morning going on trees and getting responses from half a mile away. So you figure if this is part of their territory, and these strange stick and tree structures are here, it's good enough for me to say that preponderance of evidence is that they created these structures, especially because all higher primates manipulate their environment. And so it would be shocking if these folks didn't do that. And these are the obvious signs of that manipulation. And so then you find out, then you can pretty well rest assured that this is part of their circuit, their territorial route. And then go out and sleep there. I think sleeping alone gives the best chance of having interactions. But, you know, if you're scared, if you're yellow, you can go out with someone else. But two is probably the maximum, because after that, it's a group. And they'll probably be more leery, because then, you know, you can flank them and all this kind of tactical, you know, terrain management issues come into play. But one or two people out there, and 25% of the time they come around. It's been, as you all know out there watching this or listening to this, it's miserably difficult to get footage of them. You can get audio of them quite easily, but I have a night vision scope, which is not infrared. It's just a passive collector of the ambient light. So it's also called a starlight scope. So it just maximizes the photons that are available. And I have it duct taped to my regular video camera. It works. First I had all these adapters and stuff, and I said, wait a second, just get the old duct tape. It's wonderful. So I take that out and I look around and they usually stay too far away. And then I got really lucky a year and a half ago when I was out after midnight on September 20th, 2021, and I heard a light wood knock, like just in the direction I was going. I was walking toward my campsite. I was going to sleep there, as I did many, many times before. And I kept walking along the path, and then when I was right next to this apple tree, I heard the stamping on the ground. Stamp, 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 stamp. I stopped, and I'm like, hello? And luckily, I happened to be already running my camera. It was a beautiful moonlit night with full moon, and so I was sort of getting B-roll of just my arrival at the campsite. And so the camera was on, and I turned it, and there was this little black fuzzy thing in there, and he or she fishes around on the ground for something, and then puts a branch with leaves on it, moves it across like that. So I thought, well, this isn't a bear. And then it turned around and climbed up the apple tree in a very strange fashion. I couldn't make it out at the time because I was too busy filming it. And I just had a little viewfinder, so I couldn't really see that much. But in going over the footage, I can see that it pulls itself up with its arms. And its knees are up against the tree trunk, and they're sliding up the tree trunk. But it's indistinct enough so that people aren't, it's not a slam dunk piece of footage, because it's night vision and it's underneath a tree. So you get what you get. And a lot of people thought it was a porcupine, even though the tree is 8 inches in diameter and the figure is therefore four feet long based on that in a crouch. So it's probably 5 or 6 feet tall, probably about my size when it's standing up. Then it pulls itself up the tree, and I filmed some other stuff that it does up there, including reaching an arm out, grabbing something and then putting it in its mouth, which is something a porcupine doesn't do. They're rodents, and they eat like this. So anyway, that was kind of the pinnacle of my research experience. I was 7 feet away from this individual at first, and then climbed up the tree. And so in a way, it's kind of dampened my incentive to go out. Like, I went out 55 times last year at night. And so now I feel like, well, I've been next to one. I tried for 16 years to get close to one. I finally did. And I filmed it, and nothing changed. people who think it's a Sasquatch, they're sort of like, well, great, good for you. There's nothing earth shaking about it. Life just goes on, and so that's fine. And I can't convince those who don't see what I see in the footage. But now I'm going to keep going out there, but not quite as feverishly, not quite as often, because I've expanded my kind of research mindset into looking at the history of human spirit research into life after death and contact with spirits and the history of the spiritualist movement, which is seances, that started in earnest about 170 years ago in this country and then spread around the world. And the talk that I'm going to give at your convention is putting, so that there's this whole woo category, mm-hmm. to to Sasquatch, and there's these camps, and there's the flesh and blood camp, and then there's the spirit camps. And people say that Sasquatch are, even all Sasquatch are spirits, some people say. And some people say, no, they're just flesh and blood. And I say that they're flesh and blood, and then they die, and they're much more skillful, gifted at coming back and materializing after death than we are. But if you believe in ghosts, as I do, and I've had a long conversation, interaction with a ghost when I was young, then I feel like if we can manifest ourselves sometimes under the right circumstances as a discarnate spirit, then they can. We already know that they're more psychically gifted than our species because of telepathy and other phenomena. And so I think that they're just above us in terms of psychic ability. And I don't think that the flesh and blood, still living, 900-pound, 8.5-foot-tall bodies can disappear, because there are close kin to us, our closest kin. You don't see us vanishing and cloaking and everything. I think it's the ones that are ghosts, for lack of a better word, are just more around than our ghosts are. I think they can after they physically die, they can still commune with their kin and companions back here, which is what we would like to be able to do with our loved ones who have passed on. So I think they've got this. I think they've got this. They've cornered the market on the ideal way to kind of defeat death. But I don't think that they're interdimensional when they're living. That's in a nutshell what I'll be talking about. I have a lot of good examples and videos and stuff at the in my presentation at the convention.
Awesome.
You got any comments? Anybody think I'm insane? Let's see. Lee Warner, what do you think?
She says she believes that they are way above us in psychic abilities.
Well, we're on the same page then.
I do agree with you on some aspects of that. You know, like you're talking about these abilities that these things have. They're more, you know, in tune with that side of everything. And, you know, humans have gone so far away from nature. You know, I mean, we're sitting here talking to each other over a computer, and, you know, I mean, this technology has just taken over our lives. And when you look at more of the native people, the shamans and that, these people were able to, you know, supposedly, you know, like skinwalk, change their bodies into animals or their spirit forms and things like that. Or, you know, like you said, like go invisible or cloak and stuff like those different aspects. So if these native people who were much closer to nature were able to do these things, and you have the Sasquatches who are way more in tune with nature and that environment and absolutely no technology or any of that stuff at all, there's no reason to doubt that these things obviously would be more in tune with their abilities of that nature. You know, we just have gone away from that.
Yeah, it may be that we were completely akin to them back in the day, however long ago that was. But you're right, we've sort of devolved in many ways. You know, and now we're just self-domesticated, as they say, and the wilder part of Sasquatch. I mean, they're half of their original DNA, according to the best that we know right now, was human, out of the Ketchum findings and other people's findings too, and half was some other. Well, Ketchum thinks I'm not sure what she thinks, but I think there likely was another primate species, and so. You know, back then our two species were just, you know, just bedfellows, literally and zoologically. And so then Sasquatch mostly reproduced with their own kind over the next 15,000 years or whatever it's been. And we reproduced with our own kind. And so that has allowed for this forking of the paths. So we still recognize, and they still recognize, an extreme kinship in one another. But you know, the differences have become greater over this time. But this is why, I mean, the kinship and the magnetic or gravity, force of gravity between our species is such that you often find them right next to human civilizations. That's one of the surprising kind of developments or revelations in research over the last 10 years or so. I and others have been pushing this, is that they're not just in the wilderness. Some are, of course, but surprisingly many of them are right next at the edges, as you say in your intro and the whole theme of your shows, the edges. And you'll find more stick and tree structures in microforests next to our settlements and civilizations and parks and playgrounds and roads than you will 2 miles farther into the woods. I mean, I just think that they're keeping tabs on us because their survival depends upon it. And they're also drawn to us with this ancient kind of pull, same thing that many of us feel toward them, not all of us. some people don't care about it. I'm like, what, are you out of your mind? Some people, even worse, is that they pretend to be interested. Oh yeah, I'm really interested. And then after about 5 minutes, when you start talking in like details, their eyes glaze over and they're looking over your shoulder for somebody else to talk to. And you're like, okay, so this wasn't a genuine. Many people are interested in the idea. They're moved by the idea of it. But once you get concrete, you know, they become they lose that enthusiasm because it becomes more like a regular research field than it is the spooky, chilling idea. People like to be chilled. I mean, it's like once a year, people like Halloween stuff. But you and I, every day of the year, want to be more than just superficially chilled. We want to learn and delve deeply into this kindred species and find out more and more about them every day. And I sometimes feel that our research community in general is sort of stagnated. We haven't really made much progress in the last few years, and it's sad. Sad, really.
The Bigfoot atheist says, "I don't think you're insane, Mr. Noel. I think that you just don't have the evidence to prove the supernatural." With all the stuff.
No, well, the only evidence is much of the same that we use to prove Sasquatch itself, which is sincere eyewitness accounts. I have a good friend, a very trusted friend, who was driving with one of her friends along the road near her house, a house that was a habituation site where I filmed the thermal footage called the Woodpile Sasquatch many years ago. And driving home to this same spot in broad daylight, she and her friend saw one walking across the road and disappeared, just freaking disappeared. And it wasn't that it had zapped their minds, their brains, and because everything was continuous. The driving wasn't continuous. There was no like sudden gap or loss of time, even a few seconds that would have allowed it to go into the woods. Everything was continuous, but this thing disappeared. And then you have thousands and thousands of those same reports and reports of people like Mike Patterson. Years ago, people would dismiss him as crazy, but more and more, I've come to fully credit the legitimacy of his experiences. He's stuck to his guns for more than 10 years. He's shared all sorts of extremely compelling footage and audio, and he has them. He and his partner there, Dwayne, they go out in the snow, and they ask for a footprint. And while they're standing there, and this has happened on several occasions, and they've had this on film, not the actual formation of the footprint, but the moment they turn around and there's a footprint that wasn't there before, right behind them in the snow, one footprint. And this is something that human spirits can do too. They can manifest, they can affect the physical world in the right circumstances. If there's a strong enough connection to some mediation, some human medium, not necessarily a professional medium, but you know, a medium in the sense of an instrument to work through, they can, Sasquatch and humans, we're both humans, but Sasquatch and us can materialize briefly from spirit to matter. And that seems to be what they're doing. And in fact, sometimes when these sudden tracks will appear, just a single track will appear, there'll be hair in it. So it's kind of like a hybrid between spirit reality and earthly physical reality. Anyway, I have that on video that I'm going to show with Mike's permission. At the conference.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, people who have had these encounters with the paranormal and ghosts and stuff, you know, they say like they put down like talcum powder stuff around things and these footprints will appear in it. And it's the same instance as just what you're talking about there with the snow and that, you know. And here's another thing that I'd like to mention with you is, you know, are you familiar with like the tulpa?
I haven't heard that. No.
Okay. A tulpa is like a thought form. So if enough people believe in something, they manifest this thing. Yeah. And I'm wondering as you're talking there, like, you know, if we're out there looking for Bigfoot and something else is out there, like a tulpa or some other creature, and we're asking for these evidence and something else is leaving it. You know, it's just because you're out there looking for a Bigfoot doesn't mean you're not going to run into a bear. Doesn't mean you're not going to run into something else in the woods. You know, there's tons of other creatures that are natural and that, you know, are cryptids and stuff out there. And you never know what you're going to find out there. And I think some of this stuff that people are encountering just is something else. And because they're out there Bigfooting, they're saying, well, you know, I heard this noise, Bigfoot must make it. And isn't it weird or, you know, something, but it has nothing to do with it just because you're out there.
Well, once you throw open the gate to the spirit world, you know, all bets are off. Then you can't say that you know what it is, you know. So I kind of am agnostic on a lot of these cryptids. I just don't know enough about it. I used to think that dogmen were kind of bogus because why aren't they just snouted Sasquatch? But then I've heard enough sincere reports about how they have canine legs and canine arms, you know, and heads that and ears that stick up, that I no longer can, you know, have any reason to dismiss that species. So, you know, what I know fills a thimble compared to a football stadium, you know. So all I know is that what I've experienced seems to be Sasquatch. You know, but I don't know. I just don't know. Have you experienced other cryptids besides Sasquatch?
I've experienced a lot of weird things in the woods, and I can't honestly say I've had like a dogman encounter or, you know, Mothman or, you know, anything else. I mean, I've seen and heard some weird things. I've experienced the orbs of light while out doing Bigfoot. Yep. I've heard what they call like the car door slam. I've heard that. While doing Bigfoot. I've heard the whoops, I've heard the samurai chatter, you know, but I've never seen one doing it, you know? So, I mean,
I didn't have any paranormal experiences until I was walking in the woods 2 years ago. And it was 65 degrees. So this wasn't anything about cold weather snapping the trees. And all of a sudden wood knocks started coming close. I mean, I could see for 100 yards and these were close. And there was nothing making them, but they were exactly the same sound as wood knocks that I hear at night and I associate with Bigfoot, because what else can it's not people. And so these things were invisible. I heard four different knocks in the space of like a minute. And, you know, I said, and I'd heard about people experiencing this and I never knew what to make of it. And then I'm part of that club now. And I've seen the orbs. I saw them down in Florida when I was down there with Carrie Arnold. The late great Carrie Arnold. A bunch of us went over to the spot where orbs were flying around. I saw them. You know, I think they're manifesting spirits, whether they're human spirits, Sasquatch spirits, or any number of other kinds of intelligences that can manifest in our senses. I don't know, but they were orbs, and there were lots of Sasquatch sightings right around there. I think just like people can have out-of-body experiences, I think living Sasquatch can also go out of body, which is something that I didn't mention a few minutes ago when I was saying this. I don't think their flesh and blood can, and bones can dematerialize my hunch is that that's not what's usually happening or ever, but I think that they can leave their bodies and they can, their spirit bodies can then move about, and they may be in the form of orbs. And they, you know, people talk about often feeling like they're being checked out by these orbs, like the orbs are kind of patrolling the area. The same woman that I was mentioning before who saw the Sasquatch disappearing had a orb doing a square route around her yard, up above her yard, like 40 feet up above her yard. It was just like patrolling in a square. And she's a feisty Texas woman. And she went in and got her sawed off shotgun and she went out in the yard. She's like, it disappeared, and all these trees and leaves and branches came flying down, but the orb disappeared. You know, so I don't know what that was about. But, you know, I just think that I don't know what happens to their bodies. I bet you it could be that they go off in a really thick thicket. Then they lie down and they leave their bodies, because people can do that. I don't know how many of your audience know about this, but astral travel is a real thing. I've researched it a lot. I've never been able to do it myself, but I hope to be able to. If you're interested in that, the first classic book in the modern times, even though this is an ancient practice, the best book in modern times, or what started the whole renaissance of this out-of-body travel, was called Journeys Out of the Body by Robert Munro. So if anyone's interested, pick that up. So I read that and then a bunch of other stuff, and so I think that's one of our capabilities. And I think that, once again, if we can do it, they can probably do it better.
Mm-hmm. We got a lot of comments over here in the thing. Some of them are just talking to each other, so I'm trying to weed through it. But I'm heavily involved in the subject of forest manipulation and whether or not Sasquatch, Bigfoot manipulate forest materials. I'm not sure what you mean by that. If you want to leave another comment and let me know, but
I think you just mean stick and tree structures, but I don't know what the question is. Yeah, they definitely make stick and tree structures. And I see the tall ones here, who is Brent Dill. And he and I have butted heads a lot, shall we say, over the years. So he's going to be a cynic in this discussion. So we can see what he says.
Hello to all. There's another one. Oh, I wanted to go back to Lee's here. Lee said that she believes that their hair is hollow and that the oil travels up the hair shaft and the hair stands up and the end, and the oil in the shaft makes them camouflage and blend into their background. Kind of like a shimmer effect, like where the light is bent around the hairs, and that's like kind of how they can cloak, if you will, or go invisible. We've had that discussion several times on our show.
Yeah.
About that ability. What do you think about that?
Oh, that's absolutely on point. They're super oily. Everybody finds that to be the case. And the oil really does refract and play around with light. I don't know if the hair is hollow. Polar bear hair is hollow. And I used to think Sasquatch hair too was hollow, but
I think she just means it doesn't have the medulla.
Melba Ketchum found that they do have a medulla. She was misquoted a lot earlier. She says that they do have the medulla, but the medulla doesn't contain DNA, which is the strange part. Mm-hmm. But some of their hairs might be hollow. What do I know? And the oil is created. I don't know. It may go up through the hairs. I would think it just comes out of the oil glands on the skin and is just very thick. Lee Warner, if you want to write me, friend me on Facebook, I have a video just about this very thing, about oil and camouflage and such, that I was able to put a lot of cool sources in, and so I can send you that link and I can send it to anyone who wants it.
Very cool. Here's another question for you. Did you find any hair on similar subject on the apple tree where the alleged Bigfoot pulling itself up was?
No, I didn't. I don't think they always or often leave hair, or else we'd find it all over the place, and we don't.
If you guys have a specific question, if you can put it in all caps, it'll make it easier to find here, because I know we got a lot of stuff going on over here, and Yeah, Lee is going to be at the Marinette Menominee Bigfoot Convention. She's going to be at the VIP dinner, so you'll get a chance to meet and chat and everything there. So
good. Yeah.
Definitely. Very cool. All right, I think that's about it for main questions here. If I miss something, just re-put it in there and put it back in all caps, and I'll pull it up there. Right. So if I want to talk to you, I do have your field guide. I didn't even know it was by you. I bought the field guide for the stick structures. And I mean, that is one of the things that I love looking for is these structures out in the woods. We have had and documented a lot of them up at the Hayden Adventure. And I want to kind of get into that a little bit with you here because I've noticed a few like different things. Here's a question. What evidence do you have for all the stuff like the spirit world, etc.?
Well, I've interacted with a ghost for a long time. He touched the side of my head. He rang a bell outside the house on the under the eaves outside the house, a bell that was not there in physical reality. But the ringing of that bell was caught on the cassette audio recorder that my friend and I were using so that we could call out the letters that the Ouija board was making so that we could transcribe everything later. And then 150, 170 years of research by many, many credible investigators, including the Nobel Prize winning scientist Charles Richet, back in the day, and all sorts of scientists who were members of the upper crust of British and American science profession, like the Royal Society, and all sorts of people studied mediums and the fact of information being brought back by departed loved ones that sometimes not only would the medium and none of the sitters know, only the bereaved survivor know, but sometimes the bereaved survivor wouldn't even know it. It's only something that the dead person would have known. And they later went and found out this is the case. And that has happened hundreds and hundreds and thousands of times. It's just been proven redundantly for a century and a half. And there's many, many books I can put you on. I recently put out a book called There Is No Veil, where I was able to present a lot of this evidence. So if you're interested, that's on Amazon. The spirit world, it's a large topic, there are hundreds of good books about it if you're interested. But if people are cynical about it, they're not going to read those books, so they won't find out. Just like with Sasquatch, all it takes is a little sincere and penetrating research for a couple weeks, and you find out that it's obvious what's true, and it's also obvious why a whole huge category of people push against that truth, because it threatens their worldview and for all sorts of vested interests. So it all becomes hauntingly clear if you just spend some time, actively looking into either of these two topics.
I want to address this one here. He says, I have a book that says a wizard named Gandalf existed too. Is that really proof that he did? And here's the thing, for anybody that has doubts of any of this stuff, have you tried it yourself? Have you gone out and experienced these things? It's easy to sit there and, like Chris, you said you read all these books. It's easy to sit there and watch the shows on TV and stuff. But until you've actually gone out and had these experiences, somebody up in the comments, I'm not gonna go back and find it, but also said, I had a Bigfoot experience and, that's not proof to anybody except myself.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom line here is, I do paranormal research. I am very science based. Yeah. And I have all this equipment that supposedly communicates with ghosts, but I know how it works. I know what this equipment is reading, what it is looking for, what it is measuring. And I know what it should look like, what the normal EMF measures are, what a REM pod does, how it interacts with the world around us. And when it does something that it shouldn't be able to do,
mm-hmm.
there's no explanation for that. And right. That is where we're talking about this proof. You know, like you said, these mediums that know things and are able to talk about stuff that only the deceased person knew. You know, and I know that there's a lot of mediums out there, and I don't want to, you know, we have some on our team that have proven without a doubt that they're able to do what they've done.
Genuine.
And that's why they're on my team.
Yeah, there's frauds and then there's genuine people.
Exactly. And there are people out there that, you know, do hoax because they want it for the money, the publicity, the whatever. And anybody out there can write a book. I one completely things, understand that.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
One of the cases I'm going to be talking about in my PowerPoint presentation at your convention is this famous case of these hand molds. Charles Richer, that I mentioned, this Nobel Prize winning physician who became fascinated by spiritual research, and other scientists went to many, many seances held by this Polish medium named Franek Kluski. And he could, in his seances, would manifest spirit hands. They'd be both invisible and sometimes they would form visibly. And he and his team asked if these hands could please put themselves in hot paraffin wax. So they had this big basin of paraffin wax with boiling, with a sort of like the 19th century equivalent of, what do you call those little things that keep food warm in cafeterias? Bunsen burners or whatever, those things.
Yeah.
So they had the paraffin stay warm throughout the whole seance, a couple hours. And at one point, and this happened, they replicated this experiment many times, and it's described in great detail over hundreds of pages in Charles Richer's book, his sort of classic book about all this. And they would dip into the paraffin, then it would cool, and then the hand would dematerialize, and the glove of paraffin would be left either on the table or in the lap of one of the people sitting in the seance. And they knew that it wasn't anything fraudulent because the paraffin was very thin, and around the wrists it would be like, you know, stuck onto the wrists, and there's no way that you can pull your hand out of thin, still pliable paraffin unless you dematerialize your hand. And these gloves would be left. They let them cool completely, and then they carefully pour plaster of Paris in there, and they have many of these hand molds that are still on display in Paris. So that to me is concrete proof. And of course, just hearing me say it, it doesn't sway you. If you're a rational person, you have to go into the details. You'd have to know about the credentials of the men, in this case it was men, who executed this experiment and replicated it many, many times. And you'd have to learn about Kluski, the medium. And there's a great book about him that I just read. And then you become convinced, not just because I say so, but that's one of the greatest. If you want to look it up online, it's kind of known as the Kluski hand molds. Kluski, Kluski. So that would be proof of the spirit world because, I mean, sure, it could be some other kind of hand and not a spirit hand, but you combine it with information that they bring, and the spirit hand says, this is who I am, and explains his whole life. And then you go learn, yes, that was the person's life, and it becomes more and more convincing. Not to cynics, but to the genuinely skeptical is where you're not closing off possibilities. You're continuing to ask questions until you become satisfied that you have enough substance to the answers.
Agreed. That's very interesting. We got another one.
Look that up, Barnaby. You should look it up as soon as we get off here. The Kluski hand molds.
That sounds fascinating.
I can link you. Yeah, just let me know.
In my opinion, this I think goes back to the manipulating the forest. In my opinion, we do not have evidence to claim that Sasquatch, Bigfoot are responsible for the said tree breaks and structures. The forest manipulating any materials in the forest, and that's true. I mean, you know, nobody has a video of them making it. But, yeah, I mean, go ahead. What do you think, Chris?
Well, if we wait for the slam dunk evidence where we see a video of them making it, we may be waiting a long time, and we're only going to retard the progress of our research. If we say, all right, I'm 95% sure because I record them at night making their sounds that only people and Sasquatch make, and it's 2:30 in the morning, and there are no people there because there are no lights there. And then you find these unpeople-like structures there at the same time. I think it's foolish to say, we don't know. Because if that were the case, I wouldn't go out there and camp. And I wouldn't have camped there day after day and have trees pushed down within 25 feet of me on still nights. And I wouldn't have eventually gotten close to one and filmed it. Whether or not you believe that it's a Sasquatch in that film, and it 100% is, that's what I've experienced. And I made progress based on the, the preponderance of the evidence, or the sort of like common sense view that if you have these two phenomena that are both not human together in the woods, they're likely connected. Sure, there's a chance they're not, but we'll just be stagnating. Our feet will be in concrete if we are sometimes critical thinking can outsmart itself and hold us back. If it raises the standard to an unrealistic level, you're just shooting yourself in the foot, to mix the metaphors all over the place.
Absolutely. You know, that's perfect. I mean, you know, like you're saying, well, what if these things aren't? Well, what if they are? And that's Cliff Berrickman makes a very good point that, we're never going to have this smoking gun of Bigfoot evidence. But if you go to an area and you have stick structures, footprints, hair samples, audio, all in this area, you're more likely to put that together.
Right.
And absolutely, like I had said earlier too, you know, well, if you have Bigfoot activity in an area, that doesn't mean that the stick structure in the area is also associated with Bigfoot. You know, I've gone out to a lot of nature centers specifically, like wildlife parks and stuff like that, that there is no Bigfoot. I mean, it is in the middle of the city surrounded by houses and everything else, and you do not see stick structures. You do not have anything resembling the kind of stuff that we're seeing happen naturally or even with people around. And now you're going out to these, state forests and stuff, and you're going a little off trail, and you're finding these things in areas where you had people see road crossings, audio vocalizations, maybe seen footprints or stuff, and you're finding these structures. And that's
the thing
No, go ahead. I'm done.
People don't realize that that's only step one. You have to audio record. That's the way to put it together. And I just think that that's not part of the typical protocol yet, and it should be. You don't have to take step three and go camp there, although I think you'd be rewarded if you did. But steps one and two are married to each other. You can't do one without the other.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not like we're talking about one thing. We're not just going out and seeing, a stick that's leaned up against a tree and going, there. There's something here. Let's look into it further. And you're getting more and more of this stuff connected.
I forgot one other piece. People find 18-inch long, 7-inch wide, 5-toed footprints right beside structures.
Mm-hmm.
And the real cynics are going to say, like I heard one, I won't say his name, and it wasn't you, Brent. It's one of the other cynics. They will say, well, we don't even know that the footprints are Sasquatch because you didn't see it be made. So that's an example of where skepticism just runs amok and it just self-defeating, self-sabotages.
Plus tens of thousands of respectable people who have been traumatized by their encounter can't all be lying. Well, that is, again,
not just for the existence of Sasquatch per se. So, yeah. And tens of thousands of people, furthermore, who don't even want their identities used. So far, are they from trying to gain anything by it? They just want to contribute the information to the research project writ large. And so, obviously it exists. And even if you get the beautiful, beautiful film, like the Patterson film, you're not going to convince everybody. So, we're circling all the way back to an accidental death on the highway, I guess.
So if a bear track is found next to my house, does that mean a bear built my house? I mean, let's not be completely stupid. I'm just going to say that. Like, if you
don't hold back, Jeremy. Just let it out.
I mean, let's be honest here. Do you honestly think a bear built your house when you see a bear track? That is not at all what we're talking about here at all. At all. You know, bears don't do this.
First of all, they have paws and they can't hold a hammer.
Exactly. There you go. That's why a bear didn't build your house.
Second of all, every other reason that they didn't build your house.
Now, let's look at this logically, okay? Bigfoots and stick structures. Other great apes, other primates have been filmed, okay? Yeah. Filmed using sticks to eat termites, to do things with. We know that the other great apes, like gorillas, orangutans, and stuff, use sticks to build nests, to stay in this area and stuff. And
chimpanzees, yeah. They all manipulate their environment. What's their environment? Sticks and trees and leaves. I mean, it's so obvious that you miss it. That's the kind of thing where there's this blind spot because things are so close to right in front of your nose that you just kind of outsmart yourself by trying to be too clever. But no, obviously they're a primate. They look like a primate. They act like a primate. Aside from the supernatural or psychic aspects, they're also a primate. And primates have huge brains compared to other animals. They have these hands, very capable hands. They have lots of time on those hands. And they manipulate their environment like we do. We can't help it. We build things. We make things. We arrange things.
Absolutely.
And so there's lots more to say. But
there is. I was going to say that leads us whole down your whole savant theory.
I know. We didn't even get there. That's the title of the interview, and we didn't even get there.
I know. Well, oh, my gosh. If anyone has any other legitimate questions about anything
legitimate.
The bear did not build your house. Thanks for playing.
Are we 100% sure that a bear didn't build my house?
I mean, were you 100%? There when your house was built? I don't know. Maybe a bear did. Smokey the bear. Forest fires.
Very capable. If he can put out forest fires.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible.
That question's got me thinking.
All right. I go back 100 times to the same thing. You know, I will never discredit a witness, no matter what you come forward and tell me. UFOs, fairies, Bigfoot, dogman, whatever it is. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. You were. And whatever that reality to you is, it left that imprint on your mind. It maybe traumatized you to the point of seeing something that you didn't understand and didn't comprehend. And there are, you know, as Lee put, tens of thousands of people out there, you know, and even you said the people that don't want to come forward with these stories of things that happen.
People who do come forward, and even among the people who don't use their names, there are 50 people who see things and don't come forward even without using their names.
And to discredit any of that, I have one story, and I've only told it a couple times. I'm not going to get all the way into it. I'll give you the brief of it. I was out in the woods doing Bigfooting, and I turned, and I saw a clown standing next to me. It was there, and I looked away to the guy I was hiking with because it freaked me out, and I looked back, and it was gone.
Wow.
And I've done haunted houses for, you know, like 10 years, we'll say. I've seen all kinds of crazy props and stuff. And for whatever reason, this clicked in my mind as it's just this mannequin standing there. It didn't scare me. It startled me because it was literally like 2 feet away from me, standing, you know, parallel to me.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what that was.
You're like, in the moment, you're not scared. And then afterwards, you freak out. You're like, oh, a clown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just was like walking through a haunted house and here's this clown. Okay. Yep. And I went, there shouldn't be a clown out in the woods.
A clown there.
And that's my story.
He said, go build my house, clown.
That's my story.
Yeah. That's a good one. I like that.
I experienced it.
Yeah.
You don't have to believe me, but I know it was real. I know what I saw. I don't know what it was.
It's not like you were having drug flashbacks or you'd.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like I've never done drugs, never drank. Nope.
And it's not like you're prone to hallucinations, or you tell us that too. This was a one-time thing,
mm-hmm.
and it's not you don't see clowns in your bedroom, in the closet.
Thankfully. Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know what it was. And that's you can call me crazy, whatever you want, but that's what happened. And no, you know, for any of these people out there, you weren't there. You don't know what I saw. You know, and it didn't show up on video for anybody, because I do run GoPro every time we're out in the woods. So there was nothing there on video, but I saw it. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't know. But
this has been a rousing discussion. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. And I definitely look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks here. I think it's 2 weeks away at the Marinette Menominee Bigfoot and Paranormal Convention, June 10th in Marinette, Wisconsin. Tickets are available at the door, or you can get them online. You can head over to wisconsincaps.com, and the banner that you see right here on the screen is at the top of our website, and you can get tickets for that. I know, oh my gosh, my keyboard just fell down. I know that you said you do so many conferences, Chris. You know, is there anywhere else that you're going to be, or anything else? You got a new book coming out, or anything else you want to promote?
Well, the book I mentioned earlier came out a few months ago. It's called There Is No Veil. And now I'm working on a follow-up book, but it won't be ready for quite a while. And that's it. If I get more footage to pair with and sort of amplify and confirm the apple tree climber footage, I'll put out a second documentary about the documentary is called How to See a Sasquatch. Brent Dill hates it, but a lot of people like it, and a lot of other people don't like it, but you can make up your own mind. It's on YouTube. It's free. So just check out YouTube. On my YouTube channel is Impossible Visits. And that's it. That's all I got.
I do like this. There's a lot of comments here. Says, you know, I disagree with some of what you say, but you know, they appreciate your work. And that's at the end of the day is what's important with all of this. You know, we do not have to be on the same page, but that's what research is. You research what you want. I'll research what I want. And at the end of the day, neither of us is right. And it's something completely different, but we aren't going to know that unless we go out there and we, you know, take our things and go. Thank you for the engaging conversation. Wait, a lot of your work, Chris.
Brent, I've been giving you a tough time, but I saw your comment. Oh, there it is. And I'm back at you. If it's sincere, then I'll sincerely echo it back at you.
Absolutely. This one, God bless, much love to all. So great debate. Awesome. And as well, keeping the peace. Bravo. And then this one thinks it's a porcupine, but you know, everyone's got their opinion.
And with that, there's always going to be the porcupine, folks. That's what I've come to believe.
Yep. I'll tell you real quick here. Up at the Hidden Adventure, we got a thermal video of what I would think when I okay, so we left a thermal image camera running overnight. Mm-hmm. And it had Bigfoot activity that night. We actually got a trail camera picture of what we believe is a Sasquatch that same night. We had audio, all this stuff. And we have this thermal video of this creature crawling across the screen. And I watched the video and I went, that's a porcupine. And that's just what I thought. But we went back and analyzed it, and it doesn't walk like a porcupine, for one. And then we did a real life recreation, and me and Craig Salk crawled across the same area. We put the camera back in, you know, within 5 feet of where it was, left and right. I know where it was set up. And we crawled across, and this thing was as big as me or Craig.
There you go. That's what you got to do.
Probably like 6 feet tall. Whatever
my porcupine was the same size, and the biggest that North American porcupines can be is 3 feet long. Mm-hmm. So, and you know what else? It climbs the tree. Mine does, kind of like, I'm glad you told me that. I'd love to see that footage. Mine climbs the tree kind of like a porcupine. A lot of other things are not a porcupine, but it kind of seems to resemble that. And then I'm thinking, well, they mimic animals vocally all the time. Why wouldn't they mimic one in terms of how they move sometimes? Because if people were to see that climbing from 50 feet away or 100 feet away, they wouldn't be able to, you know, I was 7 feet away, so I could make the scale. and I could film other things like the long arm reaching out. But people seeing it from 50 or 100 would think, oh, that's a porcupine, because they wouldn't know it's huger than a porcupine. So why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they do impressions of other animals, impersonate other animals sometimes?
Video is very misleading. I mean, like I keep saying, you weren't there. You know, Chris, you were there. You filmed it. You know how big it was. The video doesn't really do justice for scale and stuff like that. The people don't see it. Another one I want to point out is, I can't remember which episode it is. I believe it's season 2 of Finding Bigfoot. They interview a witness who saw one climbing a tree using only its arms, and it pulled itself up.
I've been looking for something like parallel to that. I've never seen that. Wow.
Yeah.
How am I going to find that?
Season 2 on Discovery Plus. I'm pretty sure I just watched it. I'm rewatching the entire series of Finding Bigfoot right now.
Well, if you can find that and link me, I would be forever grateful.
Absolutely. Yeah, because they actually try and have Cliff reenact it, and he goes, I can't climb a tree using just my arms.
Yeah, I tried too. It's impossible.
Yeah.
I would love that. Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. I'm excited.
I will take some time, and I'll see if I can figure out which episode that actually was in. But I'm 99% sure it's season 2, because that's as far as I've gotten. I don't have a lot of time to rewatch stuff. But
season two,
Bruce Berrickman's doing the reenactment, climbing this tree. So,
all right. Thank you. Do you remember what state they were focusing on?
I do not.
Okay. No problem.
I will go back and I'll look for that for you. I'll send it. And if you guys follow us on Monsters on the Edge on Facebook, I'll try and post it on there as well, so that you guys can check it out. And
thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you everybody for your comments and for watching, and all those who are going to watch later.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We appreciate you.
A lot of props here, man. Your passion for all the years of finding the phenomenon, I give you props,
Brian. Hey, thank you. Julie. So thank you, Brian.
Much love in the comments here for you, Chris. And you know, it's awesome the work that you do. Keep it up, and I'm looking forward to hanging out with you for a weekend coming up here. So
me too. Let's get out in the woods too.
Awesome. We will definitely.
I'll bring my thermal camera.
Awesome. All right, Chris, thanks for joining me here today. I look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks, and we'll catch up in a little bit.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, guys, that's our show for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in and this rousing discussion. Everything is in good faith and stuff. I mean, you know, everything is up for debate, and everybody's entitled to their opinion. There's nothing here but that. So thanks for everyone for watching, and keeping it going here in the comments. I appreciate all of you. Next week, I'm supposed to have, I got distracted by more comments. I'm sorry. I'm supposed to have Seth Breedlove on the show next week. So it will be a pre-recorded for Memorial Day weekend. Hopefully we can get that scheduled. So, he had, some stuff come up and had to reschedule. So hopefully he will be on next week with Small Town Monsters to talk about all his work with the documentaries and his show coming up. So that's what we got coming up for next week. And again, if you guys can make it out, come out to the Marinette Menominee Bigfoot and Paranormal Convention. The dinner is all done with. You can't get tickets for that anymore, but everything else you guys can come out the day of for the psychic gallery reading and everything else, guys. So thanks for watching, and until next time, I'll see you on the edge.